you're in charge. All right, good morning, everybody. I'll call the order of the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this, I can't believe it's August, for this Tuesday, August 1st, 2017, and ask if everybody please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you, everybody. Good morning. Nice to see a room full of smiling faces. First item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address items on today's agenda, and I'll add, or anything else you want to address us about. We won't make you wait till the end of the meeting. Is there anybody who'd like to address the board on any topic? And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on. Our first item is discussion and direction for use of community service office space by nonprofit agencies. Carla, Deb, Jean, Kim, we got a whole host of people ready to talk to us. So as they're walking up and getting ready, the background on this is several years ago we redesigned the bottom floor of the Human Services building to accommodate our community services program. Since that time, the role and size of community services has shrunk via regionalization and other factors, and we end up with a space where we've got one office or two and then some open space that we're not utilizing right now. And so it makes sense to talk about if we're just going to allow that to be vacant space or if we can help some of our providers, our service agencies, with some needs they might have. Carla, I teed it up for you. Go.
Thank you. Did a nice job. So my understanding is Raising Readers and United Way are looking for office space for two employees. One would be an employee of United Way. One would be an employee of Raising Readers. There could be the potential for Raising Readers to move all of their staff over to the space. So we could be looking at a total of six workstations that would be needed to accommodate everybody. Jean and Kim came over and did a tour. There is one office space that's open. It's a fairly large office that could work well for Kim. And then, as you mentioned, we've got lots of cubicles that are all open back in that area.
How many desk spaces do we have in those cubicles, Carla?
Oh, goodness. I should have counted it. 12.
12 of them. Okay.
Yeah, quite a bit of space. We do have another office that's currently being used about twice a month with the Des Moines Vet Center. We have Mike Brown that comes up and does counseling in that center. And there is a potential for him to add bays. I don't know if that will happen or not. But so we'd be looking for him to still utilize that office.
Right.
So then the additional office that would be open as well as the cubicle space.
Okay.
That's what we're talking about. My understanding is they would both need internet connection. United Way employee would be able to connect into their VPN system, mm-hmm. right? We did discuss the possibility of using the copier that's in our office. You know, we can separate that out by codes and that so that we could talk with IT. I haven't had that conversation yet because we wanted to come to you guys first before we dive into this too far.
So currently in that building, DHS takes the whole first floor, the whole ground floor level DHS takes. And as I recall, our agreement with DHS per state code is that they reimburse us on a per square foot basis some cost. And that's supposed to cover everything from utilities. I think they have their own phone system. But there is some kind of model out there that talks about how the county is reimbursed for use like this. So my interest, before we start talking about this, is have we thought through what kind of mechanism, and not looking for the county to become a landlord that really receives a lot of rent for space, but we also got to be covered for the utilities that would use any miscellaneous stuff that would be used. Is there any thought? Have you guys given any thought to how something like that might work?
Well, let me give you a little background. The two positions that are new for United Way and for Raising Readers are grant-funded. So we have a three-year grant from the anonymous donor, and yes, that's what they're called, the anonymous donor. And it's to help us do more in the area of literacy and language. And it makes sense for the data position to be with Raising Readers and the coordinator position to be with the United Way at this time. So for 3 years, we at least need space for both of those positions. But then when we saw the space, I know that Raising Readers has three people in an office that's no bigger than this desk. So if that's a possibility, Raising Readers currently does not pay for rent or utilities. So they're a little bit limited on what they can pay. There is some money written in the grant for rent if we needed outside rent. So we could cover, at least for 3 years, we could cover that space with that money.
Okay.
But by all means, we could have the position at United Way, but it makes sense for us to have these two positions in together because they'll be working hand in glove. So when we saw the space, we thought it was a great opportunity for us to help warm up the lower level of the building with occupants. But
and so that everybody is clear, we're talking about the lower level of the Human Services Center, and this is the very back of the office space that Community Service occupies. We would not be expecting a lot of foot traffic, public in and out.
Right?
This would be really workspace for the people that are there.
Yeah.
Questions?
If I understand this as you're proposing it, we would not have to build any walls or anything, correct? You're looking literally for cubicle space.
Yes.
Okay. And then, Kim, are you still at the new ACPC?
We are at ACPC, yes.
But that is a small office.
It's a small office.
Okay. It's a little bit bigger than the desk.
Maybe both together.
Right. So the three people will be crowded in there. My thought here, and kind of the devil's advocate realm, is that do we know of any other needs out there in the community for space that with some of our partner agencies where they might have spoken up also if they'd known the space was available? I mean, I'm just looking at it from a fairness.
And I think that's a good question, Loris. I do. I know that the annex where the ARC is at houses a lot of smaller agencies in the one or two space offices. And I haven't heard that the annex is doing anything different, and I haven't heard that any of those nonprofit tenants are looking for other space. Of course, we know Heartland Senior Services needs space. That would not be
right.
Legal aid
would need space if they made that decision, but I think they haven't.
They've actually looked at it, and I think they determined it wouldn't work.
Wasn't going to work. Mm-hmm. So from my realm with the 31 agencies that I work with, I haven't heard that anybody's looking for space.
Okay.
And actually, Raising Readers wasn't even looking for space until this grant came about.
You're working long-term, right?
Because they still have the Raising Readers room, so there is a large room that they use for programming somewhat. So.
Okay. And then we're looking at for a three-year term then? Are you asking us for a three-year term?
At a minimum, right.
Okay. Those are my questions.
Sure. Okay. Marty?
No, I have. I live in a community made better, our children made better by what Gene and Kim do. So I am fortunate to sit here in a position that's just like, no, I have no qualms here. We have space. We have, I think, addressed the day-to-days as far as keeping the county made whole on a reasonable level without impoverishing anybody. I think Loris makes a valid point in the sense that maybe there are people out there that might have space needs, but then again, I'm not going to stop this process waiting for an unknown when I have a known setting before me.
Yeah, and so it hadn't been a big secret that we've had the open space down there. DHS has inquired about it, and I think would love to spill over into that space. Legal Aid, I know, looked at it. I think multiple other entities were made aware that this space was at least empty, if not available, at least empty. And so I have fairly good comfort that we're not doing something quickly without anybody having a chance to do it. My concern is simply any kind of commitment to 3 years with the way everything is changing, and we don't know what direction things are changing. That one would be a hard one for me to swallow. I think it'd be much easier to say a year's notice, which would give you 2 years.
Absolutely.
Something like that, because any changes we're going to see are not going to be immediate, but they could be quicker than 3 years.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so that would be the only thing I hear that causes me real concern. And then the other one is just coming up with a reasonable square footage charge for what that space, and I would just ask facilities to dig into that, just divide out what we think we're paying for that bottom floor and then throw in the square footage, not talking about any capital costs or anything, just the actual cost of maintaining and operating that floor and what that square footage would need to contribute to do that, and then some kind of agreement for any other things that you would utilize. So there would be a minimal charge for the common space, like the big conference room where you would use that, and then a direct charge for any copies or anything like that that you guys would use would be the things that I think I would want to see as part of this.
And my only question would be, being nonprofit organizations, currently, the square footage space that United Way pays is well under $5 a square foot. And I know that we had even talked about looking at other space, and the $12 and the $15 square foot we could not afford.
Right, but that has a lot of capitalization in it.
Okay.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about what does it cost us to keep the lights on,
okay,
maintain the carpet. If you're using our phone lines, what is your charge for each one of those phone lines? Those kind of things is what I'm talking about. Just the actual cost, not that building's worth $9 million and here's what you're going to pay
okay.
for that square footage.
Sure. Thank you.
And I think Cal can give us that number, I think, relatively easily.
Sure. Deb had reached out to him. We know that CHS is being charged $12 a square foot.
Right, but they're paying some capitalization.
Okay.
Right. They're paying some capitalization. So we need to dig in, I believe, if the board's amenable to this, we need to dig into what does it cost us to maintain that building from a facility charge? They're going in and vacuuming every night and doing all the things that need to happen. What's the power usage down there? What are the phone calls? What are those kind of things? And I think we're going to come up with something. My guess would be somewhere in that $5
okay.
a square foot range is my guess.
I like that approach that Rick is talking about. This would now be the second situation where we're a landlord, okay? And we may have a situation of a third down the road, depending on how we can go with the crisis stabilization and transition units. So I think laying costs out front and then being able to evaluate per situation is a good way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And just so we're clear, Laura's 100% right. This is a different model than we're doing with Optimate
right.
on the group homes.
Right.
And it's probably a different model than we're doing with Optimate or in this situation, if Mary Green were to assume the crisis. This is kind of a one-off thing, as I see it,
mm-hmm.
where we have some space available. We have an agency that can absolutely utilize the space. We've got flexibility in the term of a year notice. We say, no, we need this space back for something else, or we're going to transition completely out of that space and use it for something else.
Yeah.
I just think this is the right way for us to go if you guys are comfortable with it.
Absolutely. I think the county is wise to slow walk this. We basically made a case up front. I suspect you came here kind of knowing what you were going to hear, and we have open space that I think we will serve to put somebody in it, and I think that my fervent hope is that we can get to an agreement.
Is that a motion?
Oh, is it an action item? What? Yeah, this is just direction.
Yeah, so this is direction. So the action would come back to us as we build all those things that we're talking about. And what I've heard today is, ball's in our court. We're going to put together what we believe it actually cost us to maintain and operate that space on a per square foot basis. We're going to tell you what the square footage we believe you're taking is,
mm-hmm.
and then you guys are going to have the ability to say yes or no. We'll write that into a year to year, but with a year's notice
mm-hmm.
contract, and put it together.
Perfect. Sounds perfect.
Does that sound like direction to you guys?
That's very clear direction.
I agree.
Thank you. Super. Agency reports, Art of Story County. Trisha, we were just talking about you and your space.
Yeah, I'm so glad I could be here.
Good morning, Mrs. Crane.
Good morning.
Hi, Trisha.
Okay, thank you for allowing me to be here today. The ARC of Story County continues to receive funding for four programs, and this past fiscal year we started our Project Search program, which you've all heard about before. We start our second cohort next week. Our special recreation program, or Active Lifestyles, continues to thrive in large part from the funding we receive from the region, the city, and United Way. We are serving almost 200 athletes this year. We have added a unified golf team and unified cheerleading team to our list of activities, and we now have two staff overseeing this program. Our Unified Golf and Unified Cheerleading consists of pairing each of our athletes with a non-disabled athlete. So, for example, for our cheerleading, we had a large group of seventh grade girls who practiced with them and competed in the state Special Olympics competition in Iowa City last year. We do exhaust all of our funds early in each spring year. People with disabilities in Story County have grown to know active lifestyles as a safe, social, and healthy activity to which they can participate, grow, and be contributing members in our community. The respite program gives parents or the primary in-home care provider a much-needed break or respite. Our respite funding has decreased over the past 2 years due to not being able to access funding from CICS, and this is due to the definitions changing for who qualifies for respite funding. So even for like our current fiscal year that we just started, we didn't even ask for respite funding from the region. The United Way of Story County is the only asset funder that supports us financially as the ARC advocates for people with disabilities. We have added raising awareness events to educate our members and self-advocates on issues that are important to them. In partnership with Friendship ARC Homes and ID Action, we hosted a voter training prior to the November elections. And in September, we co-hosted with NAMI our biannual candidate forum. Last August, the ARC partnered with Iowa State and Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation Services to bring Project Search to Story County. Project Search is a 9-month-long employment training program for individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The participants receive classroom instruction coupled with 3 different internship rotations through the College of Human Sciences. Project Search is a national program with an employment success rate of 92%. The ARC is not a typical employment provider. We saw a need in the community and researched the best program. IVRS will continue to provide funding for the internship portion of the 9-month-long program. This program has allowed us to meet the emerging needs of our participants and meet a growing need in our county for qualified employment services for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. The ARC has also been an integral member of getting the Inclusive Playground and Miracle Field to fruition in Story County. Regardless of whether one is in a wheelchair or has an intellectual disability, all people want and deserve the right to play, which is a vital part of development and inclusion. As always, it is a privilege for the ARC to provide services in Story County and use these services to assist others in living a life that the rest of us take for granted.
Super. Tricia, go back for me to the respite program.
Yep.
And tell me how you're funding and providing that right now, since funding from the region, you're not providing.
We have respite funding through the city and through United Way. It's pretty minimal, though. Yes, just decreased. Probably we're down to a quarter of the funding that we had before.
Huh, and so that's Carla and Marty.
I had Deb look into this for me, and Carla might be able to speak to it, because I called Trish here on the phone, and that was one of my questions too, and I thought, what don't I know here, just being recent addition to the board, and
what had happened probably 2 years ago or so, the region had implemented a HCBS waiver waitlist policy similar to what DHS has. So folks who are waiting to get on a waiver program, we were following the DHS criteria for that, where there needed to be an urgent, emergent need for an individual to receive a service. We had 3 folks at that time who had been being funded by the region. We grandfathered those folks in. They never pursued additional funding with us, so there wasn't any dollars expended that way. Just earlier this spring, the region has changed that practice where we've opened it up. We still need to make sure that folks are applying for the waiver, but they no longer need to meet that urgent or emergent need. And what we're doing also is the ARC in the past, when they would provide respite service, they were contracting or using other agencies to do that, so ChildServe or LSI. So we are opting to directly contract. We've got a contract just approved the end of July with LSI for respite, and we're doing that also with ChildServe. So we'll be able to directly work with those agencies.
So we're still getting services provided in Story County, it's just not running through the ARC right now.
Correct. Yes.
I noticed on the asset administrative team agenda for tomorrow that LSI and Child Serve were on there for the respite services as introducing new or expanding services. And so, Trish, are you not interested in trying to apply for any funding through the asset process from the county, which would be, I think, the other way to go, right?
I don't.
State law won't allow us to do that.
Because this it's a mental health.
It's,
right.
A,
okay.
It's a service, right?
Okay.
And so hopefully we're going to get that portion of the code changed this year, because I think it was an unintentional portion of the code. So Iowa code new this year says that counties may not provide any funding for any services that could be provided using regional dollars. I don't believe that was ever the intent, but that's what's in there right now. And the way we've gotten around it so far, Morris, is we've been able to pay for things that were deemed training of providers rather than direct provision services. This would clearly fall as a direct provision
service. As a direct. And it's because of the clientele you're particularly providing the service to, right? As opposed to the child serving all that. Okay, thank you.
But, I mean, the definitions have become quite a bit more strict under who does qualify for respite to the region.
Sure, absolutely. But, Carly, you feel like the region is starting to address that. Do you think there'll be more movement? I mean, so this meeting with ASSET this week will address it a little further.
Right. What's happening is Child Serve and LSI haven't had respite funded through the ASSET process. So the region, we're going ahead and contracting with them to get that going right now. And so the service would be added into the next fiscal year, so that we're going into
90.
Yeah. So that's what we're working on. But I do think by the region lifting that criteria, the urgent emergent need, it's helping us to help more folks be eligible for that regional funding while they're waiting to get on a waiver. So I think that that's been a good move on the regional part to open that back up.
Uh-huh.
So I feel good that we'll be able to get those folks served. They will have to still go through an assessment process and everything, as we're doing with other services, to make sure that they qualify.
Super. And Trish, my other question was, just give us more of an update on the miracle field. Where we stand, where the progress is there.
Well, it's very exciting. We have the final plans in place. September 16th is the official kickoff celebration ceremony. Hopefully some of you or all of you can all be there. We're doing our soft fundraising right now. Our goal, it looks to be about a $1.7 million project. Our goal is by September 16th, when we do the kickoff celebration, is that we have half of the funds raised. We're doing a very good job so far with waiting to hear back from a couple large donors. It will be completed by next fall.
Okay. Questions?
You stole mine there.
That's why I get them.
You got the right now. That's you.
Thank you, Chris. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Next is consideration of minutes from July 25th.
Move to approve minutes.
I'll second.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Motion to say any notations, corrections, additions anybody wants to make?
I'll just make a comment on them that, yes, I am interested. I want to thank the township trustee that brought up the dark skies. But, yes, I would like to hear more about that. And so thank you, Shelley, for picking that up on the audio. So thank you.
Outstanding. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions.
Pretty thin. I move approval.
I'll second.
And congratulations to Nathan. Chitty.
Aye.
Loris.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Consent agenda board.
I would move consent agenda with the exception of item number 18, which I'd like to pull for separate discussion quickly.
Item 18 is consideration of revised 2080 agreement with animal control contracts with the cities. So we've got a motion.
I would second that motion.
Consent agenda with 18 pulled. Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda. Let's talk about item number 18, revised 2080 agreement. Loris?
Actually, Deb is going to talk to you about
okay.
it. Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning.
At the July 11th board meeting, the board had approved the agreement with
fiscal year 18 services between Story County Animal Control and the cities. We received some feedback from a city council member on some clarification needed.
Okay.
And so we worked with Ethan on getting that clarification. And that is at the top, depending on how you print it out, it's at the top of the second page, right before number three, and it's that bold section that states, the city understands that all service is subject to animal control officers' availability and discretion. So that was cleaned up so that the cities know that it is up to animal control's discretion in providing the services, but also if a city wants to be notified before animal control responds in non-emergency situations, they can check that box and then provide a 24-hour phone number for animal control.
Right. So let's just make sure that everybody's aware of what we're talking about here. The cities that contract with animal control have to pay if there's a visit by our animal control outside of regular business hours.
Correct. And we did not increase any of those fees.
Didn't increase any of those fees, but we have been operating in the past that cities wanted notification beforehand. So if animal control couldn't get a hold of anybody in the city, we didn't go. Now we're giving cities the option to say, no, we want you to go ahead and respond, and we understand that you're going to charge us. So it's kind of a pre-authorization for us to go in.
Correct. Yeah, the default is we will go unless they mark that box and give us a phone number for somebody to.
Then it falls back on them again if that number's not getting answered.
Correct.
We're not responding.
Yep.
And that's the only change we have in here over what we approved before.
Correct.
And we feel like this clarifies the question that we got.
Yeah, I think part of this is a case of you read something too many times, you know what it says, but it takes somebody on the other end to read it and say, wait a minute here, you know.
Perfect.
So this is much better.
Marty, any questions? No, I think we've had clarity and put the communities that we contract with on notice on what we will provide and what we will charge for. So, I think that was what was missing. I think, Laura, that's probably what you found as you went. Mm-hmm. To talk with them that,
right.
Okay, here is a cleaned up document that represents what we're prepared to do on a 24-hour basis.
All right. Laura, you can work on this. Make a motion for us.
I move that we accept this revised contract.
I would second that.
Any discussion?
None.
Thank you very much for you guys' work on this. Olson.
Aye. Let me put it up.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. Passes. So that gets us through all consent. We don't have any public hearing items today. Additional items, consideration of the purchase of ninety-eight ID scanners for election laptops at the estimated unbudgeted cost of almost $17,000. This is all about making sure we get to ID as was passed in state law, and it's going to take Auditor Martin and Kevin just a minute to set this up.
Right. I have some introductory remarks. Kevin, we do have a little show and tell for you so you can see how this works. But I did come to the board on May 30th, so almost exactly 3 months ago, to do a preliminary analysis of how the new legislation was going to affect Story County. We do have more information on that now. Just so you know that ID scanners, and in fact, Precinct Atlas itself is not mandatory, but there's high incentives to use it. If we're going to have voters show ID, having a scanner will really sort of wash that time, that extra time, and really 50% to 60% of any election are the cost of our time is that's the people that are there. So anything that we can do to cut down on that time, I think.
What lines we move in as well, right?
Right, and so I don't want to add 5 extra minutes per voter or whatever as people. If people are already getting the IDs out, we might as well have the scanners. So, you know, the state was very clever. They don't actually mandate that we have electronic poll books. We already made that step in 2012. But again, if we don't have them, then anybody who doesn't have an ID, it would be a provisional ballot, which would be extremely expensive, cost prohibitive to run through. So, Just so you know, the timeline of how this is going to get implemented is that for the next two elections, the school and city election, and those are held on September 12th and November 7th, respectively, this will be entirely voluntary. Then once we get into calendar 18, IDs are required, but there is an affidavit that voters can sign if they don't have one. And then in 19, IDs are required and the affidavit goes away. So our hope is that we familiarize both our election workers and our voters with the process going forward. The first election that we know of happening in 18, it looks like we're going to have a special for the Ames School District on April 3rd. That's predicted. That's not set in stone.
That's the high school?
Yeah, the $95 million bond is what they're talking about. This is what I read in the papers, just like everybody else. And then the primary on June 5th, and then the general election on November 6th of 18. So if we can get some practice, both for ourselves, our election workers, and our voters, we can make this transition as smoothly as possible.
So, Lucy, your intent for the school board and the city elections that are upcoming would be to ask for ID but not require it?
Or? Right, and we're still working on how that signage is going to look, because we also want to have a handout about the timeline as I just presented it to you, to say this is entirely voluntary, but we're ramping up to this, and if you want to give it a try, please do.
I'm still one of those that for years, just coming from Maine, Montana, and Alabama, all where it's been required for years, I walk in still today with my driver's license out, and I've never needed it here in Iowa. And I think there's a lot of people who do that.
Kevin is ready to go. When we first bought Precinct Atlas, and this Precinct Atlas is the electronic poll book that we use, and it is set up to have ID scanners. Some counties use them. The price of these has come down since 2012. It's a little volatile right now. So the price that's presented is probably the low end. It could go up from there. Lisa Markley has built into the budget amendment that's coming out, I think the public hearing is on the 15th, $20,000 for the auditor's office, which would include this.
Okay.
So I'm just going to say, do you have your wallets out? Not for the unbudgeted item, but to try this. So I just want to show you what happens. This is my printed voter ID card. So if I come up and I do that, it pulls me up right there. So it's just that fast.
I want to see if I'm...
And let me see. I'll do it with your... We'll reset that.
Doesn't pull up speeding tickets, does it? I don't need that.
this is a barcode reader, so it's going to pull up. There's a barcode, a stack barcode on the back of your driver's license. Even faster with a driver's license.
Interesting. So it works off of either one of those.
Right. And this is the voter reg card that people have now. What the state is working on, it's what's going to happen if you don't have a driver's license and you're registered with the last four digits of your Social Security number. You'll get a card substantially like this one, and it'll read that, and it'll pull you up. So.
But that does not have a picture ID on it.
Right. It's picture ID. It's not a photo ID. It's an ID. So if you don't, and that's, I think, confuses people, that it's not necessarily photo ID. It's an ID that the state has provided to you, whether it's the DMV or the Secretary of State's office.
Thanks.
Oh, yeah, we were just going to keep that.
That's all right, yeah.
Maybe see if I can do something. Can I get your ATM card and your PIN number? So, the scanners are interchangeable. We don't have to marry them to any laptops. I think you can see it really, if you have your ID out, it'll pull you right up there. That keeps the election official from asking your name, typing it in. They still have to go through all their checks, but it just helps get you to that processing point a little quicker. So,
what is an estimate then? Let's assume everything works correctly.
Yeah.
All right. Is it saving a minute, 2 minutes?
I would say probably at least 2 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes. It depends on how fast you can type, how well you can hear, which, and that really, the average age of our election official, I think, is 73 years old. Sometimes the acoustics in your precinct are really great. Sometimes it's very noisy and echoey, especially if you have concrete floors or high ceilings. So anything that, and then if you fat finger keys and you have to go back and retype things, you select the wrong voter, which is always, I mean, so it should help eliminate some of those errors as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're talking about 2 minutes per voter, we just had 50,000 voters in our mm-hmm. last election.
It's a lot of time.
And for me, this is the right way to go. I like the formality. If we're doing this, I like the formality of it's scanned across there, and there's no typo, there's no nothing when it pops up on the screen. And Lucy, I really appreciate that we're going to step out and start this while it's still voluntary to try to get voters.
Right, we can work out the kinks that way. Hopefully, there won't be very many, but.
Another positive is if somebody shows up at the poll that has a driver's license that's not registered, that'll still pull that person's name information in, so we're not making any mistakes when we're typing a new person in, too. So, I mean, it's all,
yep.
It helps a lot with occasional human error that we see in voter registration on election day through the heat of battle.
Good point.
Yeah. Kevin's actually worked in a county that had scanners where some counties do have them, and it's always been optional. And from those counties, I've only heard good things about this. So for us, it was a prohibitive cost. Now that it's required, I think it would really will make up that $17,000 in the time spent in probably 3 or 4 elections.
Right, and so we believe 17, but we're talking about going up to maybe 20.
Right, this is our bargain shopping on the internet. We were quoted a price from our consortium, $250, we got down quite a bit on that. So,
yeah.
I found it interesting that as you shopped from Amazon, you know, they pulled up from Amazon. I don't think about election equipment coming from Amazon.
Yeah. Well, this is off the shelf. It's nothing specialized. It just works with the software that we already have. We don't have to do any upgrades to that. It just works with the
software. Fortunately, the county's in a fiscal position right now where if we choose, we can find $20,000 to spend on something like this. I think it's money well spent. I think it's money that we're going to more than recoup over time when you look at manpower and convenience of voters. I don't see that the state is going to back off of idea. I'm one of those who is fully supportive of the idea. I know there's some that are not, but it's the reality of where we are, so we need to deal with it in as positive a way as we can. I think it's money well spent. You guys get to
have it. Worked on a number of elections, and I got to tell you, I only wish that in the time that I was there that I had this available, because Lucy tells a story about a typo and all you had to do that you can incur, a rolling series of self-inflicted hardships.
No, I think the election officials are going to really like it.
Well, that's the thing is, the backstory is, I mean, Lucy alluded to it, when you're looking at the average age of poll workers at 73, to give them this kind of technology that, gives them comfort in doing this job, maybe you might keep some people that might otherwise say it's too consuming, too laborious, too involved, that that's a positive there, because they always struggle to get people to do the job.
True. I got some in the audience today, so.
And thank you for your service.
Thank you for what you do.
Questions? Further discussion or a motion?
I would move approval of the purchase of 98 ID scanners for election laptops with an estimated cost of almost $17,000 and up to, we have an up to?
20
is what? 20 is what's in the budget amendment, yeah.
No, okay, up to $20,000.
I would second.
Super. Further discussion? Lucy, thank you very much. Jenny?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Purchase of 98 ID scanners, which we will start utilizing September 12th. Is that right?
Yes.
Is approved.
Assuming, shipping and handling is all, yeah. All right.
Amazon's pretty good to work with. I know that I have stuff on my front door that Callie orders quite regularly. Do a good job. And you used to be an Amazon deliverer.
Yeah.
Right?
Used to be a
company. Thank you. Filled my days.
All right. Consideration of facade grant for the city of Zeering. This is something that we talked about several months ago, mm-hmm. and now it's making its way back to us. I see Brenda Dreyer approaching the microphone and Leanne Harder to take us through where we were and where we are now. And I know we've got some of our friends from Zeering here today as well.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good
morning. 1 second, please.
Ooh. It's hard to beat the scanner where it just pulls my name up right from my driver's license.
We might need something like that. That would be pretty awesome. Just reading the USB flash drive.
Good morning. I have just a few slides to just for the benefit of the board and the audience. Because since the last time we've talked about this, the program has changed. So I just want to cover that. And then I'll hand over to Brenda to share Zearing's story. The facade grant program was set up by the board several years ago. The purpose is kind of twofold. Provides financial assistance to the government. They do act as the applicant. And it's working with private entities to really complete facade improvements on necessary buildings along the main streets in these communities. It does support the revitalization of the business districts by stimulating the private investment and the occurrence of buildings and properties. They are the allowable award is a one-time reimbursement grant of $20,000 or not more than $10,000. $10,000 is not necessarily a magical number, other than that is what is budgeted annually by the Board of Supervisors towards the total project cost of facade improvements. City does have the requirement to provide matching funds equal to or greater than what is provided by the county. I'll get to that request here shortly. Again, $10,000, I didn't change this for this current fiscal year. Applicant is the city or any community working with eligible properties in the city, and the recent changes adopted by the board doesn't make properties owned by the city an eligible property too. That was a change that went in effect in the recent months. The communities that are eligible are those under 2,000 persons in populations based on the 2010 census, so that will be revisited here shortly in the coming years to see if that's still a valid number, what communities are affected by that.
Right, so that means, just for clarity, that we don't do this for Ames, we don't do it for Huxley, we don't do it for Nevada, we don't do it for Story City, but every other community in Story County is eligible for this.
Then ineligible properties are listed on the board, but the residential properties or churches, religious institutions, a tax delinquent property, or a property that's owned by an individual that has tax delinquent property.
Okay.
And then projects that have already been underway. We want projects that we start at the beginning and go forward. Their exterior improvements, they must be in publicly visible improvement. These are just some program guidelines of when the application is filed, they know that they agree to these following secondary standards, secondary material standards, rehabilitation, all that, that type of information. Now to get to the project, I'll just show a few slides and then turn it over to Brenda. The property should look pretty familiar. It's on 108 East Main Street, and the owner is City of Zearing, acquired through Prospect Condemnation. Did I have the year right? February 5th, 2016? Okay, I want to make sure I had that right. The building is on the right, obviously. It's located along Main Street on the north side to the east of North Center Street. I mean, we've all seen it when we've been up for the quadrant meetings. It is an amazing building.
Great building.
And, yeah. I've admired it since I moved here 20 years ago. The grant will be used to restore the exterior of the building. I'm not going to rant over it. I'll let them talk about their proposed improvements. But total project cost is $34,000 plus $344. County request is $6,800 with a Zearing matching 27 plus. And then I have pictures. I'll just hand over to Brenda at this point and then step away and let Zearing folks come up. These, all the pictures are from the first application, then the recent ones they added too. So I'll just quickly run through those. You've seen these.
Leanne, I just have a question. This is the newest PowerPoint for this, as opposed to what the link that we have has a different kind of a PowerPoint on it that we got as an attachment to the agenda. So my question now, let me ask it, is that
you got the attachment to the agenda was the application.
Okay, the whole thing. That's, I thought that's what it was. I just wanted to make sure.
Okay, thank you. These are the new pictures that were included with the application. Just focusing on that bay window, which really is a key element of the facade of this building. I think it'd be interesting to know how many Main Streets still have buildings that have retained a architectural element such as this. This might be quite a gem. Buildings with the arch Again, the archway and the brickwork. I can talk about Mayan history if you'd like to know the history of arches.
Let's do that outside.
In terms of the agreement, are set up in the application materials, and when they sign the application, they do acknowledge the terms of agreement. With that, I'm going to turn over to the hearing.
Morning, Brenda.
Hi, Brenda.
Good morning, y'all. Well, I'm not going to say much today other than to introduce the hearing folks. It's been really a real treat for somebody fairly new in her position to be able to be a part of a dialogue in a community. So with everything that maybe isn't going your way right away, I think in the long run this has worked out really well, because it is forced some dialogue and some priority discussion within the community, and we've extended those discussions beyond just a few folks to a broader audience. And one of those folks that's going to be presenting to you today is actually a volunteer from the community of Zeering. And so I'm anxious for you to meet Ron James, and he'll be actually introducing the Zeering delegation to you and talking about their project further.
Hi, Ron.
Good morning.
Fine, how are you?
Good, and that square microphone right in front of
this
us,
is it.
Will pick you up.
Okay, that's good. Well, for the record, Ron James, and I'm, like Brenda said, I'm volunteering with Zeering to try to shepherd this project through.
Outstanding.
And we have, of course, you know, Marty and Karen. McCarron helped our county clerk, or city clerk, helped with the drafting of the application, and Marty has provided general sensitive guidance, as he's always.
I think Marty and I started talking about this building 10 years ago, didn't we? I mean, I honestly think that this conversation has been going for a long time.
Put it in here about a year ago now. Mr. Chitty and Mr. Sanders.
Yeah.
This is a remarkable building. At 1905, it's Romanesque revival. We looked into the possibility that it was Aztec revival. It turned out it wasn't. So it is Romanesque revival, and in keeping with Romanesque, the rounded arches are a dead giveaway, especially the fussy way it was treated around the arches. It also has a veneer brick siding, which means there are no headers there. It's they usually use the fine brick with just the stretchers, no headers, which means it's prone to popping out, which is what's occurring there. It doesn't threaten the structural integrity of the masonry structure, which is actually inside behind the veneer, which is a good thing. So it if you saw that kind of bricks popping out, you in a non veneer building, you'd really be questioning the structural integrity of it. But because it's a veneer, it's a lot less concern, but it needs to be addressed. And so replacing that with good repointing, sensitive to the mortar mix and that sort of thing, and will really extend the life of this building and give the city the chance to then proceed down the path it is committed to, which is preserving it and reusing this building. It's probably the only commercial building on Main Street that is National Register eligible for listing in the National Register of Historic Places. And that's a possibility if, as we go down the line, we look at tax credits, which is an option that we'll reserve to be pursuing. And anyway, this facade grant will secure the front facade, make it presentable, preserve that wonderful bay feature, and open it up with windows so that it doesn't look like we're ashamed of it and that we prefer plywood on Main Street. Always better to have glass than plywood. And so it'll really turn this around, and will open up the door to lots of other options. The city remains committed to pursuing its preservation. there are so many possibilities, partnerships with commercial interests that where tax credits would kick in or other grant opportunities, that it's not possible at this point to define precisely how that will unfold. But with the city's commitment to make sure it does unfold, I think that's where we are. My role will be, as much as anything, to make sure that, the Secretary of Interior standards are safeguarded here and that the city does what it needs to do. I have over 30 years of experience in preservation, and if we go the route of the tax credit program or the and which would require listing in the National Register, I'd be drafting those applications and National Register.
But step one is to take care of the exterior.
Yeah, and I want to get ahead of ourselves, but I just want to tell you that we have a commitment, and that's how the various ways we'd unfold. The important thing about this first step is to make sure that we don't ruin any of the options that would be before us as we proceed.
So I've got to say, I'm so appreciative for the city of Zeering being diligent with this. So when this application first came forward to us a few months ago, Supervisor Olson rightly pointed out that our current rules and regulations did not allow this building to qualify because it was owned by the city of Zeering. We have since amended our rules and regulations, which made this open. But you guys have dug in a little further and done more work, and it feels like it's a project that's a lot further along than it would have been back a few months ago. But so appreciative for your diligence. The second thing I got to say is just generally about Zeering. About 6 years ago, the then Board of Supervisors, which looked two-thirds differently than this Board of Supervisors looked, made a commitment to our smaller towns that we were ready to help. If you were interested in improving the Main Street specifically, but your entire town, the county was going to stand ready to be of assistance. And no community that we have in Story County has done a better job taking advantage of that than Zeering, and it's a real credit I mean, you look at this. Your city of Zeering is talking about putting in almost $28,000 of the $34,000 cost. This is the city of Zeering helping the city of Zeering, and it's the county discussing whether we want to be a part of that assistance. That's exactly the way it's supposed to work, and so congratulations to you guys for being so committed, but taking advantage of I think the county stepping up and saying, hey, we're ready to help. I just feel like it's a great partnership. So
I agree.
Come up so we can hear you, please, Marty, because we're recording all of this.
What's that?
We're recording all of this. This is going to be around forever. You'll be able to Google it and see it.
You know, we had options when we started this of restoring the building or hauling it away.
Right.
And at one time, I kind of was leaning towards hauling it away, believe it or not. But then, giving it more thought, it's going to cost the city money to do either one.
Right.
And if I'm going to spend the city's money, I'd like to spend it to keep a building, not to haul it away off of Main Street.
100%.
Especially one like this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I have been working about a year now on this, and we need to start this project, and this is step one, and then we will definitely continue to look at what we will do with the interior.
Well, so I remember, Marty, in 2008, you and I stood out on the street and had a conversation about something, but you could look down Main Street, and if you went back and you had a picture of what it looked like in 2008, and you were able to superimpose a picture of what it looks like today, and with items like this, what it could look like a few years down the road. Zeering is a different town. Anybody who's not been down Main Street Zeering in the last 5 or 6 years, you won't recognize the place. It's a huge credit to the people of Zeering that you guys have stepped up to get a lot of this done.
Well, I am definitely for keeping it going. We started with a medical center and a pharmacy, and
we didn't even have a pharmacy
at that time. I was not on the council at that time. Then I told them, don't stop. I know it can't all be done at once. Money's an issue, it always is. And I don't think we have stopped. We've got this and more in the works.
It looks really good. Questions, board, or comments? Either one. Yeah, PJ, come up so we can hear
you. Yes,
and introduce yourself.
Yes.
So PJ is now on our planning and zoning commission as well.
Yeah.
So.
Wonderful.
Good morning.
Hi, PJ McBride, citizen of Zarian, Iowa, raised on Main Street, about a half a block from this building. I am just thrilled to death that things are going ahead, plus our wonderful clerk who just digs in and takes care of things. For me, this building, the top floor with the thing on it, my grandma's friend lived there, and I would go up and sit in there, and I would wave at the traffic. So as a child, I sat in that place. Bottom floor was the post office. I would go pester that postman.
Not you. I can't imagine you pestering.
No, I'm a professional pesterer. And the other side upstairs was Mrs. Martin's apartment. She babysat a friend of mine whose parents owned a dry goods store. And occasionally I would be lucky enough to be invited over to Mrs. Martin's apartment, and she had a trunk full of purses and hats that we played with all day. And the bottom part was Co's Cafe, where if you were really lucky, maybe Daddy'd take you up for a piece of pie. The thing about the additional excitement that I have is I was raised, I went away, I've come back, to see that we are alive as a community and willing to go from, I think we ought to tear it down, to... Who wants another hole in anybody's Main Street? I'm just thrilled that this is all happening. So yep. Thank you all very much.
Very much, absolutely.
This woman here had a lot to do with it, too. Just saying.
A lot of diligence, no question about that. Any questions or comments?
Councilman Kerr, you're lucky to have a man like Ron James in your community. Because I think what you're seeing is the start of a process that he is prepared to do on your behalf. Karen, you do the day-to-day. Thank you. BJ, as always, but Martin, when we started this conversation, you want to tear it down.
Yeah. Well, pretty much. I wasn't dead set on it.
You had a sea change, and I think you see the value of it. We talk that we have two prairie cemeteries that have remnants in the county. I look at a century-plus old building that is just as valued as they are, as the remnant prairie, in the sense that you can lose it, and it's never more. Tear it down, it's done. You guys have taken it upon yourselves. Not an easy decision. I know that you had some heartburn getting to this day, but this is a well-written, solid application. And yeah. I have great hopes of hearing. As we started with Dakin's, we've moved to a restaurant. We are talking about the downtown. I think this is just an installment of a book. And you're right.
$27,000 for a town of 500 people, that's a lot of money. That's a huge, huge commitment that you guys are making. And thank you.
And, you know, our plans are to continue and refurbish the inside after we get this done. Like I told people, even if that takes 2 or 3 years, it'll be a lot nicer to look at than what we've looked at for the last 10.
Well, and you can't get anybody to move into something like that right now. It gives you all kinds of options. Lawrence?
Well, first of all, thank you for your persistence, okay? Sometimes you just have to stick to the rules first time around, right? And also, thank you, Mr. James, for stepping up. I do have to admit that, looking at the money you're committing at, looking at committing and then our match, and I'm thinking, having looked in the inside of the windows, looked inside and seen that floor would be nice on that little side, and I thought to myself, wow, they are really taking on a big project, all right? And to see how you have put together within your community the expertise, the follow-through, the passion, and then the changed mind is a pretty significant combination. So I look forward to watching, even if it's a few years down the road, as the progress of this building comes back to life.
Well, that sounded awful close to a motion. You want to go ahead and finish?
I would move that we approve this grant application for whatever the dollar amount is. My computer went to sleep. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you, as stated by our clerk.
Very good.
We got a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Do I anything to add before we vote?
No, sir.
Absolutely. Lowell Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders, aye. The grant for $6,868 as reimbursement is approved. Thank you, guys. Great job.
Yep.
If I might, QJ had mentioned that she'd like to get a photo, and we have.
Let's do it right now.
Let's do it now.
Let's do it right now. Next, we got Healthiest Walk, and so Noelle and Rachel can get set up. Leanne, we need our big giant check. I'm joking.
No, we have people for that.
Oh, we have people?
Yeah, go get them.
Are you
going to
take this picture?
Okay. We have people. All right, we're getting a big giant check.
Yeah, we're going to be able to
Everybody talks amongst yourselves.
We hope to get started soon.
What is the address?
You do that with your good handwriting. Marty, Laura, come here just a second. Better than mine.
Right here, I'll go down here. There you go.
Right.
Mr. Lace Chair.
That's the last minute.
We're going to cover up your knees with this. All right, so tag's hearing with that. Thank you, guys.
Look forward to seeing how this goes. There's so much you can do if you get out of the way.
Oh, God.
It's a break.
All right. Thank you for bearing with us through that important check presentation. Now we've got discussion and consideration of Healthiest State Annual Walk. Noelle and Rachel.
Good morning, guys.
Have a great day.
Thank you. Good morning. Rachel and I are here on behalf of the Wellness Committee. We have a new wellness event that we would like to propose.
So, kind of just an introduction that obviously physical activity is an important step for people of all ages that they can take to improve their health. Increasing physical activity is like the first step, and walking is obviously the easiest commitment. So we're hoping to organize a walk for our community. So for the Healthiest State Initiative, has been going on for about 7 years, and hundreds of thousands of Iowans have participated. So this year's walk is on October 4th, and their goal of the office is to have at least one organized walk in all 99 counties. Right. These are just some generic benefits of walking. It'll increase employee morale, decrease a lot of the diseases, and just create a social cohesion that we're hoping to improve. And then another step that we hope to take pending approval is reaching out and just getting a large community participation with other local businesses so we could all walk together. We've listed some potential examples we could reach out to. And then there's some benefits that the community can also see.
Rachel put together some tentative routes for each of our locations. Obviously, if we did receive approval, we'd talk to each location and make sure that they felt that that was a route that would be acceptable to them. As far as the schedule, we would like to propose a group photo at 10:55 right before the walk started for those that were planning to participate at 11 o'clock at each location. We would like to have the timeline from 11 to 2. Our hope with that is to increase participation for employees. With the staggered time, it allows for office coverage, and we think that will encourage employees to participate. When we got the toolkit last week from the Healthiest State Initiative, they suggest that we offer refreshments afterwards. We do like water bottles or maybe trail mix or something like that.
And so would it be an appropriate use of dollars if we so determined that we have a little closeout pizza and cookies and water up here like we've done with our recognition breakfast?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And we actually, last October when we were doing our strategic planning for this fiscal year, we have a little over $1,000 for this project. Allotted for that. So something we were looking into. We also talked about providing t-shirts for employees that were going to participate. Last October, we were talking about doing customized t-shirts, but last week we found these t-shirts are pretty economical, and we can customize them by putting Story County on the sleeve.
Okay.
So we thought that would be a good opportunity for our team to have something that's a little more customized.
And I'd like, instead of just the word Story County, I don't know what you're, I'd like to consider putting our logo on the sleeve.
We can definitely look into that.
Okay.
If that's an option. Yep. In conclusion, you know, this walk represents more than just 30 minutes of walking. It's an opportunity for Story County to promote wellness, and the Wellness Committee, that's one of our goals, is to continue to promote and offer different events to our employees. But this opportunity also gives us options to reach out to the community and promote wellness within the community as well. So our proposal is that we ask for your approval for the walk as work time due to the benefits previously stated for employees. We've done that with the health screenings and the wellness sessions and the blood drives, and we've received a lot of good feedback from the employees. They feel like Story County really cares for their health, and that's made it a lot more accessible for them to participate in those events. And then we also ask that the board announces a proclamation during the October 3rd board meeting, and then just support and encouragement through our community.
Super. Yeah, and so the only thing I would add to that I would like us to consider, and if we want to do this without considering this, I'd like for us to have refreshments that include some kind of, and again, maybe it's not pizza, maybe it's something else, but some kind of gathering place for when you complete your walk here from 12:30 to 2 or something like that in this room. So, cool questions?
Just as a comment to that, that'd be great, I think, to have a more significant kind of lump. Yeah, the pizza sounds great right now.
I'm with you.
The budget, we may have to, as a member of the Wellness Committee, have to come back and ask for just a little bit more.
And I'm suggesting that if this board wanted to include something that wasn't there, that this board would be committing to those dollars. Now, we would have to run, so we've got state auditors visiting today. We need to run it through and make sure that this is an appropriate use of dollars. But pending that, I would suggest that we don't count on the Wellness Committee to absorb the cost of something that we're suggesting, if in fact we're suggesting it.
Okay. And I would make a motion then, unless Marty gives you
No, this is pretty much the story that tells itself, frankly. You know, I think this is worth it. Worthy support. Most of the dollars are there. Rick Wise to say, okay, if we have to go above and beyond, are these dollars appropriate? Because we don't want to get ourselves red flagged needlessly. Okay. Other than that, make the motion.
Okay. I make the motion that we support the October 4th wellness initiative with a walk. First of all, by allowing work time credit to be allowed for those employees who are going to participate. Second of all, by that we bring forward a proclamation on October 3rd. And third, that if appropriate, according to state guidelines for use of money, that the Board of Supervisors commit up to, you want a dollar amount per se, we can probably do pizza for under $200, I would think. Or
Wherever you think, yeah.
Okay, up to $200 to support an end of the event kind of
employee
recognition. Okay, and then wait a minute, period.
Second. Further discussion?
None.
Does that seem reasonable to you guys if we go down that road? All right. Olson.
Aye.
Chief.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Thank you guys very much. Thanks for bringing that. So we're departmental reports, and we've got one of my favorites, Margaret James, to report to us today.
No.
It's always exciting to hear about well plugging and lead testing and swimming pools.
Okay.
Maybe press you.
I will, yeah. Spoiler alert here, you know. Okay. For the record, Margaret James, Environmental Health. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
How about that? Would you have believed that it was going to be morning? Stop saying it.
What are you going to do with the rest of your day?
I get it. I don't usually come in the evening.
Good afternoon.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, good morning. Okay, I'm going to start off with Crestview. Today is the meeting. It's kind of a big meeting at 2 o'clock today, Board of Health. Two things we need to see from Crestview is proof that 15 abandoned trailers have been properly removed from the site, and a timeline showing the steps toward park closure. Okay, and actually, I'll leave it at that. I did talk to Brant Lehmer today. He asked me to stick to the truth this time. So that sets the stage for this afternoon's meeting. I'll leave it at that.
Not
well,
a tall bar for you.
What?
Not a tall bar for you.
thank you. Well permits. We have only issued 2 well permits this year. We are so down. Our geothermal guys are basically out of work. It's very scary for them. They're switching over to dirt work and plugging wells, things like that. But, you know, the bottom has just fallen out of that because of the tax incentives, the federal tax incentives are gone. So we'll see what happens with that. 11 plugins, 94 water samples, and 32 time of transfer inspections.
Let me just say this about the geothermal. So I'm fortunate that Kelly and I built our empty nester house at a time when you still had the credits and we put it in.
Mm-hmm.
And it is such a phenomenal way to heat and cool a property. It's consistent. Our costs are way down. It's disappointing to me that this is not something that's able to stand on its own 2 feet yet. But it is something that seems to be really, really worth having done.
Yeah, especially new construction. Thank you for
looking at. You're going to be running out of cisterns.
Sorry?
You're going to be running out of cisterns.
Cisterns, you know, people like their cisterns. They're usable. Wells, we'll always have wells to plug. It's amazing.
Oh, I get that, but it's just cisterns, you see, with all, you know, that seems to be a period structure.
Yeah.
On some of these older homes.
Yeah. Well, root cellars, tornado, shelter, holes for snakes.
Okay, so Gloucester counties, we spent all but $1,000 that little add-on to the grant came in the final quarter. So we spent, $35,000, did really good. Water tests, the breakdown financially, $12,000 for the water tests, $17,000 for plugging, and then they allow a little bit of training or supplies to be covered by the grant as well.
And do we have the grant again for 18?
Yes, sir. Yes, about $30,000.
So if somebody wants to be in the mix for getting a well plug, mm-hmm. do they just need to contact you?
Contact us. We like to go out and look at it. We do get audited, so we need to have the paper trail.
Don Struthers approached me at the county fair last week and asked a question. I referred him to you, but now I'm mentioning to you that Don Struthers says he's got a couple of locations that he would be interested in plugging.
Excellent, yes. Okay. All wells qualify.
Okay.
Okay, septics. This is just a picture of a low-pressure ag-grade system. I'm just throwing up different pictures each time I present to educate. 48 septic permits this year, lagging a little behind. 17 repair permits and 53 time of transfer inspections. Special projects. We've got two mounds that we cannot figure out what's going on with them. Fairly new. We're afraid that maybe what happened is paint and plaster, or not plaster, blah, 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 wall. New houses, a lot of stuff goes down the drain, and it will really hurt a septic system. Sand filter peat moss replacement, that's our first we've seen. Ames Golf and Country Club, their clubhouse is now hooked. They're not paying thousands of dollars for pumping anymore, so they're up and running. That's good. We're looking at new septics going in for the housing now. That is going to be interesting and very difficult. We'll see where that
looks like. They've got 6 units right now under substantial construction, and I think they're building more basements right now. They're working on the north side.
Yes,
right now, but it looks like 6 units that are fairly substantial.
Yeah, so that'll be happening soon.
Margaret, when you say interesting, maybe difficult, can you give me an idea about what exactly may be difficult or different about this?
They're all going to be Advantix systems, which is good. Right. It's good because it's very tough soil. When this plan was drawn up, and with those Advantix, we want to see them discharge to laterals, not to the ground surface, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Those lateral placements are going to be tricky, especially knowing that, I was out there when they were doing the earth moving and that. It's going to be like putting it into brick clay. I don't know what we're going to do out there. They might end up having to pump it over to an area that hasn't been disturbed yet, and then treat it there. So we'll see. I mean, we'll get it done. It might cost more than what they planned. I did notice that the engineer wasn't really aware that he was assigned to given the project until I talked to him afterwards. So there's a little bit of a disconnect on that project.
Their engineer.
So all we can do is hope for the best, stay tuned, and maybe the big pipe will come up the road soon. See. And then, Environmental Health gets involved in the interagency reviews, and we put in our 2 cents worth on septic systems and that. Pumper inspections annually. We contract with DNR to do their inspections for them. So, and we do Marshall County because they're not interested in anything state-ish. So we do those two, land applications, easy inspections. Story County, we have two, and they both land apply. Combined, it's about 600,000 gallons of septage being just spread across the land. That's how we do this. Income from the program, about $6,000.
Mike Badger has, with Drain Tech has been very instrumental in working with City of Ames, getting them to lower their fog prices at their treatment plant, because that really should not be land applied. It just really takes forever. Fats, oils, and greases, it takes forever for that to decompose. Violations that I saw, there's no violation of septic. You're supposed to bring the pH up to 12, not doing that, and record keeping fell short this year. These are pictures of land application. On the left is Drain Tech. This site happens to be south of Lincoln Way, kind of across from Country Landscapes, that area there. The white, Laura, if you'd be interested in that, that's the doggy bag from pumping the Ames Parks and Rec place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so okay. Those are decomposable, but that's why there's such a visual impact for that, is because of those bags. They haven't decomposed yet. And then on the right are two pictures. Earl Sanitation up in Zeering, they have basically two spots where they land apply. One is on a farm site, and that is the top picture, bottom right. It then is they have an agreement with the landowner. There's a grassy strip along the wind turbines, and they shoot along there. Both sites, all three sites, really no people living around that area, except for Drain Tech was on that land. That's the only...
He lives right where he's put.
He does, yeah. Absolutely, yes. So, okay, pool inspection program countywide, including Ames, we have 71 pools to inspect, and that includes like city pools, the Mary Greeley pool, the apartment pools, and hotel pools. So, pools, a lot of pools, and the program brought in about $12,000. Matt closed four pools due to chlorine levels. One was way too high, one was way too low, and then also water circulation problems. There's a few things that automatically close down a pool, and it's almost always the chlorine levels. Numerous violations found that they did not result in closure. Matt's biggest complaint is the turnover is so great with pool operators that he has to train them every time, and it just takes a lot of time. But it's part of the deal, I guess. And then we're still dealing with that Madison pool that was built they built it without a permit, and it's still closed. Nobody can swim in it. They built it with a big drop off, and the state does not allow that.
Is that in Ames?
Yes, on Mortensen. Okay. It's one of the apartment pools. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Tattoo and tanning, six tattoo parlors, all located in Ames. We brought in about $1,500. Violations included expired items, maintenance, no smoking, record keeping, nothing dangerous. So they're all doing a good job out there. Tanning bed facilities, we brought in about $1,500. Signage, timers, lamps, eyewear, operator testing, not current, things like that. The state, because they have had budget cuts and layoffs, they are putting this program on hold, which is causing some disconnect there. So just stay tuned, I guess, for that.
What does that mean when they put it on hold? Does that mean you don't go out and inspect?
Well, we still do, because we charge the tanning bed folks. We charge them, and they pay us directly. It's kind of strange. The state wants to permit them, but they want us to do all of the legwork. So just, it would make more sense if we did the permitting, just like septic systems. Mm-hmm. We did the permitting, we did the inspection.
Yeah, so what's interesting about this is if the state put their program on hold, technically a tanning facility would not have to get inspected, would not have to go through all the check marks, which were the check marks, in order to get... It'll be interesting for us to see what, if any, impact this has, because now all of a sudden it's going to be tougher, Margaret, on you to go in and say, well, you're violating these things... Therefore, here's the ramifications when the state's not backing up.
Backing up. So, it'll be interesting. And Kathy's been doing a good job on that program. Okay, animal confinements and horses. I was on vacation, and Matt covered for me for the Kauser Cattle Company. That didn't mean I wasn't deeply involved in reviewing that, and they passed, and it all went fine, apparently. Lincoln Feeders, several complaints from one individual party regarding dead animal removal and the impact to the environment. So not just the visual, but, you know, are they leaking and is it getting into
right,
the water?
The DNR went in and looked at that. You went in and looked at that. And we found that this is just a tough deal that Lincoln Feeders is actually doing what they're required to do.
Yeah, and he's just dealing with a surge of dead animals right now. He's got some illness there.
And I know it's not our official business, but have you heard, as you've been dealing with this, about how he is doing as far as that illness goes? Is he still losing swine?
I don't know. I don't know.
Animal mortality, do you have a percentage thereof? I mean, you're going to lose just me. But there is some illness, and I can excuse me because I wouldn't be able to tell to you in about a half hour, but it's just going through certain operations. This happens to be one. And you have a point where you're just ahead of the rendering truck, and the point that you have to move them from the confinement area to the catchment point, and you get a little bit over capacity in that sense, and somebody sees that, and I understand the discomfort, but there is science behind why it came to what it is.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that.
Laura, it shouldn't be a long-lived thing. It should be with this batch,
once this goes through. But, you know, I understand her concerns that, well, illness, more antibiotics get in the water. You know, it's science, and I understand her concerns. And then we had two, out of the blue, we haven't had this call in a long, long time, two callers inquiring about dead horse disposal. Rendering plants, apparently, Marty, are not wanting horses anymore.
I don't know that. You can talk to the cattle and the pig people, and that's just part of doing business on a day-to-day. But on a horse, I don't know that story.
Yeah. So, we welcome, pharmacist has a nice publication. We give them that, burying depths of soil, this and that. Yeah, so pretty much they have to bury them or work with ISU. Sometimes they use them for research. So, just an FYI. Training, county provided the customer service training. Three of us went to that. Pool tattoo tanning training down at IDPH. Every year they have training for us for that. Keep us up to date on changes. I attended the Habitat for Humanity. This is up in Waverly. They have, it's an old base that Habitat purchased, all the houses, and then wastewater folks went in and put in different systems on each one. So we went in there and just kind of saw what they look like, you know, 10 years after they were installed and how to do that. So very excellent program to do that. And the bloodborne pathogen safety, that is for the tattoo inspections. And I thank you.
Absolutely. So one thing that we need to update you on, part of the conversation that went with the Cowser conversation, not directly tied to Cowser, but this is we were talking through kind of where we can, and then the addition of, we thought had Ethan here last week when you weren't able to be here to talk about the master matrix and what, if any, additional requirements the county may put on it. One of the items that came out of that is a conversation about would DNR, for a fee, be willing to take on the scoring of any new master matrix we may get, taking it out of staff's hands.
DNR
is hurting for dollars. They're the ones who know all their rules that they won't share with us anyway. And and so just as Ethan was sitting there last week, but we wasn't intended that you would hear that you were excluded. You just happened to not be here. Having the conversation with DNR of, is there any mechanism to utilize DNR to do the initial scoring of any new master matrix comes in on the county's behalf, at the county's expense, rather than farming it out to you and other staff members to spend time and deal with rules that, frankly, well, they would never, when you asked for the rules 3 years ago, you couldn't get them. I think, Laura, you also asked for them, and you couldn't get them from their internal rules. And so that hasn't gone anywhere.
That would be the fox watching the fox. Wouldn't the concerned citizens of Iowa, wouldn't they have?
Well, DNR is the one who ultimately approves everything anyway.
I know, but
it
seems like they might have a little concern
with that. It will not happen at the county level. So.
Master matrix you're talking about. But how the county deals with any new application, the county, we the three of us can utilize any mechanism we want to score any new application that comes in. And, I mean, it can be anything, and then ultimately the three of us decide whether we recommend approval or denial, regardless of how we get to that. And it just seems to me that, so there was a county recently that recommended denial, which doesn't mean denial. It means the DNR goes in and does their own scoring anyway, right? So why wouldn't you just start right there, and then at least the board can still recommend denial, but at least then you're all dealing with the same information.
Rick brought this up and asked Ethan to look into it, and so that was a request, and I have some concerns about it that, I'm sure, that we would talk about depending on the response, because I do feel that when staff goes out, they know our county. Okay, so at least, and so if the DNR is coming in to score it, would we necessarily, some of them would be easy, you can measure so many feet or, you know, or whatever and stuff. But it's an interesting idea. I want to give Rick credit for thinking outside the box. I mean, that's definitely outside the box. And I could see where the positive in that would be is not asking you guys to spend time, because our staff always does such a thorough job, which is good. I like that.
And it always just drops in on you. You're never
And so you have to rearrange work.
Yeah.
I've not ever seen you more stressed than when you're right up at the end of dealing with a master matrix.
Yeah.
And it feels to me, and I said this a week ago, it feels to me a little like we're asking you to go into a dark room and feel around on the wall for the light switch, because DNR doesn't give you all the information that you need.
Yeah. And since they can override it. You did see, did you, when Ethan sent back the response, didn't you see the actual response from the AG's office?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so you understand where Ethan came and recommended that, you know, this was going to be a fruitless effort from all, you know, we'd really be taking on probably a losing effort.
Yeah, but it doesn't diminish, Loris, and I want to give you credit where credit is due, it doesn't diminish the value in us having the conversation that we had. We found out we couldn't go anywhere with it, but there's value in at least having the conversation to find out that we couldn't go anywhere with it.
Well, I appreciate that. A lot from that, maybe a little twist, instead of DNR doing those reviews, maybe hire a private consultant or somebody who used to work for DNR that, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
instead of DNR. I think that the public would perceive that, you know, a DNR review and another DNR review and then a DNR message. I think that would be...
Yeah, so just so we're clear, and Margaret, I think you know that this has been at least my philosophy, and it was definitely the philosophy of the previous board. I hope it's the philosophy of this board, that every time we do a master matrix, we never, ever, ever change our procedures while we're evaluating the master matrix. Mm-hmm. When we get one in, until we're done with that one, we utilize whatever procedures are in place, because it's not fair to change the process while you're in the middle of one. But then every time we finish one, we just finished Calson's, we take a look at our internal process. Last time we finished Chumlin's, I think, and we reevaluated our process to get us to this one. Now, this was the first time that we've utilized, or second, this is one of the first or second time that we utilized this new one, where we have multiple staff coming together, and I think we found some logistical hurdles with doing it this way. And so now I think is the perfect time to dig in and see what other options we might have for dealing with this.
Okay.
If we don't ask, we don't know.
That's
the philosophy.
Yeah. No, I once again, it is the perfect thing. We render our decisions as with the tools that are provided to us. I think we can do better. I hope the legislature does take the opportunity to revisit this. This is 15 years old. And it probably doesn't need to look.
It'll be interesting to see if they do. I wouldn't bet money on it.
No, I'm not going to hold myself with that. That's,
Anything else for Margaret? Good job. Thank you.
Once again, I can't be there this afternoon.
No,
thank you. Jerry and Margaret came up yesterday and kind of walked me through, you know, what they've done yesterday. So thank you.
Super.
Thanks for all your work and going out into it. Looks like a
getting near the end of rescue. That sounds like a great thing. No other reports today, so we're to public forum number two. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics not on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so?
Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll go on to the liaison assignments and updates and announcements, and it's your turn this week, Laura.
Okay, well, first of all, I'd like to know about the livestock that we purchased at the fair last week. Who did the bidding?
I think it's Jeff Longnecker who did it.
And if you've ever been to a farm auction, you don't always know who's bidding.
Okay.
And what the thing is, we just provided the funds for somebody to do the bidding, so somebody won.
Thank you.
There's a mechanism there that I think you need to have explained to you because it's not a clear sign.
Jeff does a really, really nice job of making sure that every young person, so what we're talking about is bidding on the ribbons that the young people win for their animals. And Jeff does a nice job of utilizing the board. We personally each kicked in $100 for Jeff to utilize, and he utilizes that to make sure that every young person is getting the maximum amount possible. And so we do a lot of upbidding where we make sure that grandma or grandpa is going to kick in that next denomination to get it done. And Jeff has done a great job for us in the past. I was there last year, wasn't able to go this year to the auction, but I'm really confident it was well
used. The Herda board met last week. There were several new developments that I'll bring forward as they become more applicable. I think the key thing is that the Boone transition now is 1 month since Herda took over the actual direct delivery of those services and in Boone County, and that transition has gone well, and that's important to us because the buses are here. They're sharing some drivers between Story County and Boone County, and they're looking at running a shuttle. So it's very much we are tied in logistically to this for a while. So that was encouraging. It does mean that as the transition occurred, the staff, particularly the office manager and the mobility coordinator, they have been tied up with Boone, and so the couple of initiatives that we're looking at, working with Cliff and some of his co-employers, and also looking at getting some meetings out in the smaller communities, just meet and greets, so people know that they can go shopping weekly, taking the bus, the Herda bus as a group or whatever. Those are going to be pushed back a few weeks, okay? I thoroughly enjoyed my 15 minutes with the guests we had from the Iowa Vocational Rehabilitation Program. They were high school students. It turned out there were about 9 or 10 of them, and they were from multiple high schools throughout the county. Huh. And we are not as glamorous as I'm sure the sheriff's department that demonstration. So I focused on anybody can be a supervisor, and it's good to have a variety of backgrounds and focused on. We do a lot with the budget, so it goes very fast, doesn't it, Margaret?
A lot of questions.
We have a transportation meeting again this afternoon. Noon. I'm meeting with Progress Industries, and Brenda Dreyer is going to be here from the ADC. I mentioned that earlier. To see what this group wants to do, they want to form a separate group, separate from what is the transportation collaboration. And Deb and I have talked about this also, about concerns. Are they really just trying to look at supported employment for their group, in which case it goes back to the asset process, or are they really proposing looking at something else? So hopefully we'll have a better idea. And that's why I won't be at the Department of Health on one. Housing Trust has 3 new board members, and I'm very excited about the 3 that were nominated, representing consumers and representing advocates, and it's nice that those are the next 3 people appointed to the board. Our last meeting of the Housing Trust Fund Task Force is now set for this month. And just to let you know, coming up is in the first full week in September is the Housing Iowa Conference, the annual housing conference in Cedar Rapids, and I have registered for it, and it's not in our budget, so I don't have any problem paying for it myself, but,
You're always welcome to pay for something yourself if you want to, but I think it'd be most appropriate to get it in front of us as something for the board to determine whether we see value collectively in having somebody go. But let's see if we can get that on next week.
I'll get that on next. Okay. All right. And that's it. Everybody have a good week. Thank you.
Marty.
Tough act to follow.
Crestview will take on a life of its own at 2 o'clock in this room. Anybody so inclined to come and learn, please join us. We had another seminar at the Regional Mental Health meeting last week, kind of signing contracts, taking into account. We've gone through, we've got a process engaged as far as learning what that Senate File 504 is going to do to our operation, not only in this year and the out years. We've got an emergency management tabletop exercise coming up with Keith Morgan and Dr. Jamie Weider involving a multi-fatality LP accident in Iowa State. That's where it's in. Keith is a colorful guy when you leave him alone and think stuff up. Have engaged in a conversation with Amber Curry out of Main Street Living. I thought Bill Bond did a wonderful job presenting to us last week on a possible enclave or enclaves in industries around the county that just, she thought, as I made a solicitation to her, she thought that would be something she'd like to do. We'll be slow walking that through some places here going forward through the fall, seeing if they can get some operations, because that is something they'd like to do with their folks. Then finally, the Nevada Recreation group has had a severance with the hospital. They've moved in and bringing the school involved. You will be seeing us now as it turns to August that they will be bringing proposal to the community here in regards to a four-site proposal to provide facilities and changing the facilities in the Nevada community as a whole.
So to provide the recreation without it being one set facility.
Right. It will be, you will be seeing it. The discussions will involve a repurposing of Billy Sunday baseball field. You will see the proposal for a new baseball field, and you will see a new city-owned, city-constructed indoor facility at the Square Park facility. But it will be moving on a dual track through the Nevada City Council and through the Nevada School Board. So stay tuned. It comes out of the water, out of the ground this month.
Super. And in relatively unheard of, I actually have an update today. Normally, I make sure that all of my things end up on our agenda and we get to talk about them as we go through the meeting, but I couldn't find a spot for this one, nor did City Manager Schenker want to come over to have this discussion as part of our conversation. But City Manager of Ames, Steve Schenker, and I had a really nice, productive meeting last week. They are in receipt of the letter where we request they join us in the housing study. And I think he really wants to take it to his council and use it favorably. His one cautionary tale is a lot on the council's plate right now, so it may take a little time to get through the process, but it will move. We also discuss trails, and not only within the city of Ames, but connectors out of Ames. And my feeling that Ames need, as the gorilla in the room, figuratively, they need to be a participant in some of those connectors that we're talking about making, specifically south, but really throughout the county on the bike trails. We also talked about Drainage District 5, which for those that don't know, is about 10,000 acres that ultimately flows right through the new land that Ames annexed east of town. We got, well, the initial quote that we saw was $4 million in upgrades in order to get that thing operational. It now resides with our engineer, ISG, to come back with us with other proposals that can accommodate that ground. But with the City of Ames, since we first started talking about this to now, City of Ames has now formally annexed that ground. And so I asked Steve to make sure that the city was part of that conversation, since it clearly is going to impact what happens with some of the ground they annexed, and so he was amenable to that. We talked about the reopening of the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, specifically the northern section between Ames and Gilbert, the reality that we're in there. Actually, the road's closed and we started construction on paving Grant, Breton, 530th, whatever you want to call it, depending on where you're standing, Hyde, depending on where you're standing on the road. That is going to open up an area that there has been a moratorium on any new developments, specifically 180th to 190th. And the three of us, Gilbert, Ames, and Story County, who are party to the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, need to get together and have that conversation sooner rather than later. Ames is in the middle of their LUPP, Land Use Policy Plan. And until they get to the end of that, they're going to be reticent to talk about much of anything else
But once they get to the end of that, they recognize that this is a conversation we need to have. I've also talked with the mayor of Gilbert about that, and he is enthusiastic about being part of that conversation. Talking about the stop sign, the four-way stop that we will be putting in on completion of our paving project there at 190th and the aforementioned multi-named road between Ames and Gilbert, and just made Steve aware of it, especially since at the southern half of that road is now the city of Ames, but it's necessary with the crossing of the trails and the fact that that is one of the great drag strips in all of Story County. This will make that drag racing a little tougher, at least a little shorter. And then finally, we talked about the traffic control, necessary traffic control at Cameron School Road and George Washington Carver. That's entirely county right now. You've got Ames Golf and Country Club and the new housing development that Margaret mentioned on the northeast corner. You've got the church on the northwest corner. You've got Mr. Borgmeyer's farm, which is not imminently developable or annexable, but it's coming. There's already plans for Spain to extend all the way through and tie in with Cameron School Road down the road. And now Friedrich is talking about developing the entire southwest corner all the way back to the tree line, and with annexation to there occurring. The city actually does have capacity to annex that and be able to service it with water and sewer, but that's a terrible intersection that's only going to get worse. I have suggested on multiple occasions that I believe that's the right place for the county to look at its first roundabout. Mentioned that to Steve Schenker. My feeling on that is there's got to be some kind of traffic control, different traffic control there, whatever it is. But if we were going to discuss a roundabout, I believe that should not reside totally with the county, even though it's totally county property, because ultimately it is going to become Ames property. You look far enough out on the timeline, Ames is going to take it. Clearly, we got development going on around it, and the added caveat is if you're going to do something with the idea that ultimately Ames is going to take it, not only should Ames fund at least part of it, it should also be built to their specifications if they're ultimately going to be responsible for maintaining it, repairing it. And so we talked all that through about us having that conversation, and he agreed that it was a conversation worth the county and the city having about where we go there. So, like I said, I couldn't find a spot for all of that to fit naturally. It's items that will ultimately come to us, but it'll come to us one piece at a time. But we did have a full conversation, so it resides out there with Ames at this point. That will be one of the last and definitely the longest update I ever have. There's nothing further. I take a motion to adjourn.
I'll move.
I will second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
I say aye. We are
adjourned. Aye.